Chapter 9. The Internet. For most things you do, there's some kind of guidebook. Sports come with rules, gadgets come with instructions. Even proper letter writing is taught. The date goes at the top, followed by the address, and so on, all the way down to the PS. There are whole books written on what they call etiquette, which cover how to behave in any social situation. These books come in handy when you're going to a fancy dinner party. They'll keep you from using your dessert spoon in your soup. In other words, if you want to do something properly, there's usually a way to find out how. The internet, surfing, chatting, emailing, doesn't really have instructions, though. It's too new. Think of it this way. If the internet were a person, it would still be in elementary school. So you can't even necessarily count on your parents to help you sort out sticky online situations, because we have about as much experience with this stuff as you do, maybe less. The ability to instantly reach people or to simultaneously chat with dozens of folks around the world is new to us, too, and chances are good we're making the same mistakes you are. In fact, the internet is so new, relatively speaking, that when my friend Gary called me at work one day in 1994 and said, "Dude, you gotta grab some domains," I had to ask him what the hell he was talking about. Did he expect me to buy houses on my salary? Turns out he was telling me to take common words, add a .com to the end, and register them for myself, like golf.com or cars.com. There was this new thing called the World Wide Web, he said, and I could own some names that would be pretty valuable one day. Names I could sell to companies who would use them for something Gary called websites. I wouldn't even have to pay anything. All I had to do was sign up for them. Here was a guy with honest-to-God vision on the phone, handing me the key to untold wealth, and what did I do? I told him he was crazy, hung up, and went back to typing press releases. Gary, who registered a bunch of names and even started successful websites like Match.com, is now a multimillionaire. Me? I'm still typing. Still, I was curious about all this computer stuff, so when I found out about America Online later that year, I signed up. Pretty soon I was emailing, instant messaging, going into chat rooms, and yeah, I was even checking out websites, and pounding my head against the wall because I hadn't listened to Gary when there was still time to register valuable names. I was just about the first person among my friends, well, excluding Gary, to do any of this stuff. Since AOL was just catching on, and public chat rooms weren't yet filled with creepy people, it was possible to actually find places to talk about your interests and to make friends who shared them. I hung out in a chat room called the Writer's Cafe, where I chatted with everyone from a guy who's always on the bestseller list to a romance novelist I'm still friends with. We traded advice on dealing with agents and meeting deadlines. We gossiped. We talked about our marriages or boyfriends or girlfriends. And we told gross jokes. Oh, and we all took turns caring for Lauren. Lauren was a cancer patient living in a hospital in Texas. She was another regular in the Writer's Cafe, and she was online an awful lot. What else did she have to do aside from getting radiation treatments and watching television? She'd send us her poetry, email us about her loneliness, and from time to time, she'd call one of us on the phone and talk in her small voice about how much she wished her hair would grow back or her dad would come visit her. Her mom came every day, but her dad couldn't handle her illness, so he never went to the hospital. Lauren would never give any of us her address, because she didn't want us sending her presents or money out of pity. Just being there for her in the chat room or on the phone was enough, she said. Still, we tried to do things for her. The best-selling author winked at the camera while on a morning news show as a signal to her that he was thinking of her. Tanya, the romance novelist, tried to figure out which hospital Lauren was in so she could plan a surprise visit. Lauren found out about Tanya's plans from someone else in the chat room and firmly told Tanya to respect her privacy. Not long after that, I got an IM from Tanya. "You're going to have to sit down for this one," she wrote. And being goofy, I typed back, "Duh, I'm at my computer. You think I'm standing?" There was a pause. "Lauren's a fake," she typed. Turns out Lauren wasn't sick, wasn't as young as she claimed, and wasn't even living in Texas. I don't remember anymore how Tanya finally found all this out, but I remember how sick I felt when she told me. This girl had made me care for her, had made all of us care for her, but she was playing an elaborate and pretty twisted game. Lauren sent one final email to her friends in the Writer's Cafe with a long and senseless explanation of why she'd fooled us all. She didn't even apologize. Then she disappeared. But you know what? I bet she didn't disappear. I bet she just changed her screen name, came into our chat room as someone else, and got her jollies reading our chat about how much she'd fooled us. In fact, I suspected that right away, and I got so creeped out that I stopped going into the writer's cafe.